Going beyond the headlines to the deeper issues. 96.3 WHUR and HUR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Insight Segment, where your questions and comments matter at 202-319-7810. Join the conversation.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Insight Segment. I'm Harold Fisher.
There is not a black man I know, be he a relative, a friend, or a coworker, who has not been the subject of some form of profiling or discrimination. Growing up, my sister and I had to deal with the neighbor who told us her parents couldn't play with us because we were black.
Democratic presidential contender Kamala Harris last week talking race in America. She brought the issue into the living rooms of Americans who wanted to hear from the candidates. She also took Vice President Joe Biden to task about working with segregationist senators on Capitol Hill.
I do not believe you are a racist. And I agree with you when you commit yourself to the importance of finding common ground. But I also believe, and it's personal, and it was hurtful to hear you talk about the reputations of two United States senators who built their reputations and career on the segregation of race in this country.
Tonight, we're going to dive deeper into the issue of race and election year politics. My guest is Dr. Greg Carr, Chair of Afro-American Studies here at Howard University. What do you think? We want to hear from you. Lines are open, 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Tweet us using the hashtag WHURFM. Dr. Carr, thanks for joining me. I appreciate it.
Always good to be here with you, Harold.
So listen, the latest race issue comes in the form of a deleted retweet by Donald Trump Jr., the president's son, that retweet from alt-right commentator Ali Alexander. He said, quote, Kamala Harris is implying she is descended from American black slaves. She's not. She comes from Jamaican slave owners. That's fine. She's not an American black, period. We're asking tonight, and Dr. Carr, I want to ask you, is she black enough? Because that is what we've been hearing, not only from alt-right and conservative commentators, but we are also hearing that from some black folks.
Well, of course she's black enough. Blackness isn't an American phenomenon. It's a global phenomenon. And yes, she's first generation. And so when Ali Alexander, who is an agent of chaos of some, we kind of know who he is, when he said she's not an American black, she's half Indian and half Jamaican, he didn't say she was born in India or Jamaica. I mean, she's birthright citizen, which makes her an American citizen. We didn't see this kind of contretemps when Ted Cruz, for example, was running in the Republican primary a couple of years ago. And Donald Trump Jr., I mean, to quote Bernie Sanders, who tweeted out, Donald Jr. is a racist too. Surprise. Well, we know that birtherism worked quite well in the Trump family. They started that mess with Barack Obama, as Senator Harris said. But of course she's black enough, if for no other reason than she has been lumped with the rest of us. We don't want to forget that she is also Asian. And she is running, and she would be, if elected, the first Asian president, president of Asian descent, South Asian, India. But this black American argument, and we see some of this coming from this on social media with this hashtag ADOS, American Descendants of Slaves, which I think is weaponized ignorance. There are a couple of people, Yvette Carnell, Antonio Moore, who have been on social media on YouTube talking about this notion of what makes you a native black American, who is due reparations. This is all in some ways, it's all a tool that's being used to spread divisiveness. And at least one of the strains is coming from the extreme right wing in this country. So none of this is new, brother.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're talking about race and election year politics specifically. Are the candidates black enough? What do you think about that and that statement? Give us a call if you have a comment or a question. So I guess the thing that I find so disturbing about this, because there is another African American running. You got Cory Booker running. There were questions about President Obama when he was candidate Obama about whether or not he was black enough, where they were talking about culturally, whether they were talking about socially. There were questions about, well, you know, is he, you know, he you know, he's a light-skinned black guy, okay? And so that makes him more palatable. We have now Kamala Harris, a light-skinned black woman, Cory Booker, you know, a light-skinned black man.
Well, there are three, aren't there? The brother of the mayor of Miramar, Florida, Wayne Messam, who is a chocolate-colored brother who isn't polling right now. Okay. Well, but of course, if his name was Pete Buttigieg, he might have the power of real affirmative action in this country, whiteness. It seems that one mayor has risen in the polls while the other has disappeared. But technically, there are three African-Americans running.
Do we need a paper bag test?
Is this old Howard Brother? Neither of us could get in here.
Yeah, how about that? You might be behind me.
Well, I couldn't get in anyway, brother. We're state HBCU Negroes.
That's right. But, you know, I mean, I think, but do African-Americans, are they politically color struck when it comes, and I don't mean color as sure, color of skin, but I'm talking about color of the politics here.
Well, brother, this is always the importance of having WHUR and having the Daily Drum and having insight, having you on the air. We can have these conversations with each other in a frank way that don't varnish it. Of course, we still have these challenges. As the great Howard alum Zernial Hurston once said, black folks are fools about color and hair. You know, Kamala Harris went to Howard. That makes her black. You know, in the mind of a lot of folks, she's a black woman who went to Howard University. She pledged AKA. But now if we dig
and
down.
Born in Oakland.
No, quite. Born in Oakland, brother. Don't get no blacker than that.
Yeah.
You know.
You're black.
Black. As we say in Ebonics. That's right. Yeah. But you know, at the same time, blackness is complicated. So that Oakland, home of the Black Panther Party, wasn't necessarily the experience of Kamala and her sister Maya growing up. And then, of course, she spent many years in Canada before coming here. Blackness is complicated. And if you dig down in the class structure of our people, some of the internal critique of Kamala Harris from folks who are lower down in the socioeconomic order in our society, in our country, are talking about her record as a prosecutor in Oakland, which is entirely legitimate. You're talking about the fact that perhaps she wasn't as friendly to the lower class, working class black folks when it came to incarceration and truancy and things like that. And so it's complicated. But none of this internal conversation that we've always had, that we struggled through, has anything to do with the white supremacists who would then say, well, can we divide people about being black? And it also doesn't have anything to do with non-blacks, particularly white folks, giving some assessment or assignment of value based on skin color, education. Because if we remember, the vice president of the United States and the Obama administration, Joe Biden, said that Barack Obama was the first bright, clean, articulate African-American candidate to run for office, thereby completely disrespecting Jesse Lewis Jackson, disrespecting Shirley Chisholm. And that was Joe Biden, who hopes, like Tim Ryan and a couple of others in this race, to capture these elusive, somehow pined for Trump Democrats, these elusive white men who apparently will vote maybe for Joe Biden and wouldn't vote for Cory Booker or a Messack, or for that matter, for someone from the LGBT community like Pete Buttigieg. And of course, we have Beto O'Rourke, who, you know, calls himself Beto, that's his name, but his birth name is Robert Francis O'Rourke because he was named for Robert Kennedy. And when we saw, for example, the other night, Julian Castro come for him fairly vociferously, he came for him pretty tight in that second night of debates. You know, anybody from Texas who's been following Texas politics knows that there's no love lost in many ways between Castro and O'Rourke, who won a majority Latino district in El Paso. And so race is complicated. But one thing folks don't get to do is come into the black community and tell us who's black.
Yeah. How about that? 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We're talking about race and election year politics. Let's go to Dawn. Dawn, thanks for calling. What's on your mind? Calling from D.C.
Hi. Hi. I just wanted to say that while the race conversation is very important, sometimes it pushes the conversation a little far to the left. And in my workplace, we have a lot of moderate, I'm going to call them Democrats, and they're more concerned about the economy and jobs, whereas the race conversation is extremely important. The issues that affect everyone, obviously race affects everyone, but those things aren't being talked about, and so it alienates those moderate folks. So what's your take on that?
Your thoughts about that, Dr. Cole?
Well, if we've been
listening.
Thank
you, Dawn.
Thank you, yes. Kamala Harris has endorsed Medicaid for All. That applies to everybody. Proposed a middle-class tax credit, applies to middle class. Elizabeth Warren has promoted Medicare for All. She's going hard after corporate capitalism, talking about taxing extreme wealth. So has Bernie Sanders. You know, in this country, left and right, moderate, conservative, all of these things have been linked to, mixed with, and viewed through the lens of race. So when people say the left, it becomes a proxy for more than issues, really. Because if we're listening to these the Democratic debates, all of these candidates in one form or the other, even so-called more quote-unquote moderates, like the governor of Montana, who was able to get Medicare expansion passed with a majority Republican legislature in his state, Bullock, they're all talking about policies that would promote and advance the interests of the vast majority of people in this country. But somehow they are linked in this political rhetoric to these scare phrases, socialism, the extreme left. Is it really extreme left to want everyone in this society to have health care? And then after that, they're bound together with this, with these things that have everything to do with race. Everything from Elizabeth Warren being called Pocahontas,
yeah,
and the sitting president, by the sitting president of the United States, to the fact that they are tarred with these racial overtones. You want people to get free stuff. There's nothing free in this society, except, of course, if you're an extreme billionaire, at which point you seem to get more money, or your corporation that gets a tax cut and then turns it into a corporate buyback, a buyback of your shares. This is, you know, we have to really get beyond this conversation about, well, we're not talking about policy. No. People aren't listening.
Yeah, they're apparently not. Let me go back to the phone lines, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're talking about race and the race for the White House, the 2020 campaign. GQ, calling from D.C. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
I wanted to comment on what y'all are talking about.
Go ahead.
I agree with both of you. What is black enough?
What do you think is black enough?
Black enough is anybody. See, but to me, Harold, this country goes by, they judge you by your pigmentation.
Mm-hmm.
If Pamela Harris got stopped by law enforcement, they'll say an African American woman. If she goes and applies for a job, they're gonna say she's a black woman. They're not going to know her family heritage or her true ethnicity until she tells them. Because you got Hispanics that have the same pigmentation as African Americans. And when law enforcement pulls them over, they assume that they're black because they're brown skin, dark skin, same as Ethiopian, same as anybody else. So Pamela Harris, she is black enough because this country is judging her by her skin pigmentation.
Okay.
Not her family heritage.
Well, thank you so much, GQ. I appreciate that. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Carissa, calling from Baltimore. What's on your mind?
Okay. First of all, I got to say that President Barack Obama is the best president ever, and he will be my president for dear life, because number 45 is a racist joke, and all he has done is came and divided the country, divided the people more than it was ever divided that I have ever seen in my whole life. And as far as the race for the White House or even for any position, I'm more concerned about the politics. And I'm not so concerned about the color. I want to know what policies are they going to change to make it a fair shake for our black men that are constantly pulled over. I'm not talking about the ones that do stuff. I'm talking about the ones that are trying to do right, and they're constantly being profiled, constantly being pulled over, constantly being locked up, like the Central Five. That's a prime example, and I hope that every black person watch that movie, because that shows how the justice system is trying to build jails for our boys instead of building schools and putting money into the education system. And these politicians.
Well, Carissa, let me see if Dr. Carr can address that, because she brings up an interesting point. Cory Booker Senator Booker has brought up that issue. He lives in a predominantly black community. He has brought up some of those profiling issues as it relates to his neighbors. And Kamala Harris has been accused, as you said earlier, of prosecuting, you know, black men. Some would argue with impunity. And so, is that the next big debate, or the next big issue between the black folks running for president?
Well, brother, I think that that's going to eventually surface. Again, we're well over a year out before anyone is nominated, and people are talking about Iowa and New Hampshire on the 3rd and 11th of February, but the South Carolina primary is the 29th of February. And I think we're going to see some of those issues really highlighted in states where you have pluralities of black voters in greater number. You know, Cory Booker's record is rather spotted as well. He's a big supporter of charter schools. When you look at him, he was the mayor from Newark. There was no love lost in many black communities, particularly the lower down in socioeconomic order for Cory Booker. I do think, however, that if one of these candidates, non-white candidates, makes it through the primary and is on the ticket, the Democrats would be difficult to beat. If Elizabeth Warren wins the nomination and she puts Cory Booker in as VP, or Kamala Harris serves as VP, I think it's very difficult for Trump to win. Now, I do think, of course, that if it's two women, you know, this society may not be ready to do that. And I hate to say that because we know it's a misogynist society in addition to being racist. But if Kamala Harris is the nominee, you know, there are any number of people she could put on the ticket. I wonder if she put Cory Booker on there, if they could beat Trump. Again, race rears its ugly head. But I would agree with Clarissa. Now, as far as Barack Obama being the greatest president in her lifetime, I would say this. If we're just looking at policy, I'm going to have to go with Lyndon Johnson. I don't even think it's close.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. There you go. You make an excellent point. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We are talking about race and the race for the White House. What role do you believe it plays? Are the candidates black enough? Might we see yet another birtherism controversy during the 2020 campaign? All of these questions we are attempting to address tonight. So if you are on the phone, Derek calling from Virginia, do not hang up. We're going to take you next. Also, Maurice calling from Maryland, we're also going to be talking to you. Lines are still open at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Jeff Brown is next with the original Quiet Storm on WHUR. This conversation continues on Sirius XM in just a few seconds.
The Howard University Radio Network is WHUR 96.3 FM, WHUR World 96.3 HD2, student-run WHBC HD3, GlassHouseRadio.com, SiriusXM Channel 142, HBCU and SiriusXM Channel 141, HUR Voices, Washington.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We are talking about race and election year politics with Dr. Greg Carr, Chair of Afro-American Studies here at Howard University. Lines are still open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Is the phrase black enough? Should it be part of consideration when you're talking about the African-American candidates that are running for president? Let's go to Derek calling from Virginia. Derek, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Thank you for having me. Good evening to you also, Dr. Carr.
Good evening, brother.
I was calling today, actually, because I am actually one of the people that is a part of the ADOS movement, the American Descendant of Slavery movement.
Good.
And I've engaged with you, actually, on Twitter, Mr. Carr. I actually wanted to make a couple things clear. The conversation for us, at least, or on Twitter, or with, I think, a large portion of black America, I'm not saying all, has nothing to do with Kamala Harris being black. It really doesn't. Most black people don't even care about that. What we're talking about is lineage and ethnicity. That's what we're talking about. And if your family comes rooted out of Jamaica, all of your cousins, your grandparents, you can't be African American. It's very simple. Now, when I say African American, I mean a descendant of U.S. chattel slavery. I don't mean a second generation person whose parents are native-born African. Okay? So that's kind of the issue. The other issue that we're dealing with is that Black America has learned from the Obama administration. I would have to agree with you, Mr. Carr, here that Obama is not the greatest president at all. And if you look at his policies, he actually took away more from HBCU funding than George Bush did, which most Black people don't know. But we are largely an apolitical group. What ADOS is doing is bringing awareness and trying to instill a political education or awareness in the African-American community that largely lacks. Ms. Harris's policies do not support Black people. That's the problem. Not only does her record not support Black people, but Black people have been telling every candidate, we want a Black agenda. Neither do two Black candidates have one. So that should be something that Black people should be looking at, that supposedly these are Black candidates, supposedly African-American. Mr. Booker is, for sure. But these people don't actually have anything for Black people. What they have is to share for everyone else. But H-1B-1, which Ms. Harris actually supports for Indians, which she is an Indian first because that's who raised her, okay? And secondly, also, the immigration policies that she's also behind do not service the Black community.
We have the actual data.
Hold on for a second, Derek. Go ahead, Dr. Carr.
You know, I was going to say, Brother Derek, and I hope you hang on for a few minutes. This is the kind of weaponized ignorance that ADOS, this hashtag, is promoting. There is no we. You don't speak for anyone other than yourself. I hope you don't embrace the extreme xenophobia of Antonio Moore or Yvette Carnell, at least as they broadcast it on YouTube and some of these other venues. I'm not sure if you understand. Just so we're very clear, when we say we have the data, I assume you're talking about Sandy Darity, my colleague Sandy Darity at Duke. None of this, and I'm sure you've also read the platforms of all the candidates for Democratic nomination or seen the debates. For example, their positions on appointments to the federal bench. The Trump administration has appointed about a fifth of the federal bench in the last 2 years. These are the judges that will decide our fates, the fates of the people who claim to be speaking for the majority of Black people. And not only is it incredibly short-sighted and deeply underinformed, it's really weaponized ignorance to talk about anything from reparations to immigration visas as, you know, these are the single issues facing the Black community. And Derek, with all due respect, brother, I think anyone listening to what you've laid out of the last 60 to 90 seconds can come away very clear about one thing. This is not an informed political opinion. And as far as this, who is Black and who is not Black, you know, I would encourage you to study not only the long history of the reparations movement, but the history of African solidarity movements, which speak to the fact that everyone must address our local issues, folks who are addressing local issues other places. ADOS has come out staunchly against non-Black American populations. And in that alone, you know, I think it has to be rejected categorically.
Well, Derek, thank you so much for your opinion. I'm going to have my producer grab your phone number because I'm
Please.
Sure that at some point we may want to have you or members of your group on this program.
With an extended time.
Yeah.
Harold, let me set up a special issue because we got to walk through this, man. This weaponized ignorance is killing our people.
So, Derek, thank you so much. Stay on the line and so we can get some information from you. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We, of course, are talking about race and the race for the White House. Let's talk to Maurice calling from Virginia. Maurice, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yes, I am not a member of ADOS, but I am a American descendant of slaves. And for this man to say it was weaponized ignorance is
yeah,
not
Yeah, I did. Correct. I did, brother. Weaponized. First of all, were your ancestors slaves, brother? You're a descendant of slaves? Or are you descendants of Africans who were enslaved?
No, I can trace my lineage back.
No, I understand that.
You're going to let me speak? No,
because this is kind of weaponized. You can trace your lineage back to those who were enslaved, as can I. I'm not the descendant of slaves, brother. I'm a descendant of human beings who were enslaved. That may seem like a semantic point, but understand the importance of weaponized ignorance. If you start your history and your conceptual universe with slavery, then you make a reparations claim for people based on some unequal human relationship. This is weaponized ignorance, brother. Now, please continue.
Oh, thank you. I'm glad that you showed respect to let me talk. First of all, what ADOS has done as a group is to galvanize people that have noticed that people that say they are allies on all talk, but when it's time to put up or shut up, they don't put up.
Give me one example, brother.
Hold on.
One example.
Let him make his point.
Yeah, please.
Go ahead, Maurice.
Right. So when Kamala Harris was asked, was she going to do anything specifically for black people? She said no, very clearly.
What?
So, yes, look it up.
Oh, come on, man. This is the weaponized ignorance. Go ahead. Excuse me.
That's the point. You're all emotional for the simple fact that you know I'm coming with facts.
Could you please give me the, in your fact, could you name the date and the time she said that, brother? Please give me the fact. F-A-C-T, brother. We're going to spell it. Fact. What is the date? What is the time she said that? Give me the time, brother. The date.
It's very clear that Adolf is a problem.
No, give me the fact, brother. Don't move from what you said.
No, hold on.
Weaponized ignorance, brother. Go ahead and make your point, although Maurice, I would argue the fact that while, you know, there are a large majority of African Americans who are descendants of slaves, I think the point that Dr. Carr was making is we did not start here.
Of course we did not start here, but the thing is, the American descendants of slaves have a special claim to this country to be paid for the services that have been rendered to this country to help build itself off of free labor for 400 years. And when we ask for that,
if you're a slave, you don't have no claim, brother.
Once again, you want to interrupt me. Yeah. Are you going to have a conversation?
Trying to help you. If you're a slave, you have no legal claim.
Or do you want to have a monologue?
No, you got to stand a basic legal concept, brother. If you're a slave, you have no.
So, Maurice, what's your point? Go ahead and quickly make your point. I've got other calls I need to
get to. My point is this. We're not going to turn out unless we get something in return for our vote. I'm very comfortable with having a racist like Donald Trump represent this country for another 4 years instead of have somebody like Obama represent it and done nothing for the black
people. Okay, Maurice, I'm going to walk you through this, brother. Okay. Where are you calling from?
Thank you. I'm calling from Northern Virginia, sir.
Okay, in Virginia, which is the Fourth Circuit of the Federal Circuit Courts. You're comfortable not only with a racist being in the White House, but appointing more circuit court judges so that when you get stopped in your home state and you go to court and they lock you up forever, all the judges on the federal court bench, the Court of Appeals in the Fourth Circuit and Supreme Court are supported by that racist. You are comfortable with that, right?
Hold on.
I'm asking you a direct question, brother.
Even yourself said Lyndon Baines Johnson, a known racist.
I ain't talking about Lyndon Baines Johnson.
Hold on, Maurice. He makes an excellent point.
I'm asking you a fundamental question, brother.
Because I think the most people, when they make a comparison, when you're talking about a Barack Obama versus a Donald Trump, we're talking about image. But I think that when you talk about some of the brass tacks,
yes, sir,
that as it relates to election judges, when it comes to how immigrants are addressed in this country, and not just the legal stuff, but for those who may take the president's word as word and not do the intellectual work themselves by demonizing Muslims, by demonizing people from the Hispanic community. So I think that there is a broader issue here. But I'll let you finish, and then I've got to go. Why would you be
the simple fact that you won't let me talk, sir, lets you know that we're a problem.
Hold on, Maurice. Let me be clear. This is my show. So I can allow to
let him talk, brother. This is weaponized ignorance. That's what we react to.
No, hold on. And I don't want to call names either, but I will determine who can and cannot. So I said I will allow you to go ahead and make your point quickly because I need to run.
Right. But my point is this. From the last caller I got on his phone, he has been using it.
What's your point, Maurice?
Is we will not deliver our vote unless we get something tangible put on the table for our vote. We're tired of the last.
I asked you about judges, brother. That's tangible.
Of delivering our vote for nothing to show for it. Yeah. And you will feel us in the election if you don't put something on the table.
You're going to feel them judges in Virginia. You have a great day. This is the weaponized ignorance. You hear that right there? Look, Harold. This is ridiculous. It's utterly ridiculous. And this is what you're talking about, man. This is the investment of this time on social media. This ADOS phenomenon is absolutely part of this divisive tactic.
Well, I think the one of the issues is while the point I think that he makes is one that African Americans have been making for decades, that they want something for themselves. The problem that I have with that is that you may be able to ask that of a Kamala Harris. You may be able to ask that of a Cory Booker or a Bernie Sanders or something. I think there's a chance there's a better chance of you getting it from one of those folks than getting it from Donald Trump as it relates to black people.
I
think there is and you should ask, just as you should ask, you know, the guy who's running for dog catcher, you going to clean up that crap on my street.
Right. Or Donald Trump.
You know.
We'll be comfortable with remaining Donald. I mean, you know what Donald Trump has said. But the thing kills me, at the second debate the other night, Marianne Williamson was the only one to bring up reparations. And it was quickly glossed over. Now, some of these living folks, and we just heard from a couple of them who support ADOS, would say, well, I guess they're going to vote for Marianne Williamson if she stays in the race. What they haven't, either they haven't read, haven't studied, haven't heard, or just don't care, at which point it becomes an agent of chaos kind of thing, is that several of the candidates, including Kamala Harris, have supported the passage of the reparations bill, H.R. 40, which is a study bill, but also a remedy bill. I doubt they've read even the 3-page H.R. 40, which talks about having remedies for the effects of enslavement of African people in this country. And Senator Harris has come out in support of it. Senator Booker has come out in support of it. Senator Sanders and Senator Warren, among others, have come out in support of this. So when I say weaponized ignorance, I'm not name calling. I'm saying that there is an ignorance at play now that is being used as a blunt instrument. So if you say that to someone who's alleged ADOS supporter, whatever that means, and their reply is, we're going to withhold the vote, cut the check. No. Answer the specific question in the face of fact. And when you say she said she wasn't going to do anything specific for the community, that's a fact. Okay, when did she say that? That's a fact. If the reply is that's a fact, that's a weaponized form of ignorance.
But I would also argue, and Maurice from Maryland stayed with us, and Lewis from Waldorf, and we're going to pick you up next too. I think that if you can say for the basis of this conversation that Donald Trump is not going to do anything for black people specifically, minorities in general, other than talk about the unemployment rate, then you can say, well, you need to vote for somebody else who could, whether it's reparations, whether it is health care, whether it is infrastructure. Because as Maurice from Virginia, he was talking about reparations. Well, one thing we do know, Donald Trump was asked about reparations last week. He said he didn't think it was a good idea.
Right.
Okay. So
And Mitch McConnell said it was Barack Obama was the reparations.
Right, exactly. And Kamala Harris has been also gone on the record in support of that. So, you know,
it's not facts. I mean, let's say he's from Virginia. Let's look at Virginia and the Affordable Care Act Medicaid expansion. You had to get a Democratic House and you had to get a Democratic governor to push for this Medicaid expansion. The Republicans will not expand Medicaid in most of these places, which makes what Bullock did in Montana a victory. In Florida, there was a referendum to reestablish voting rights for those who've been incarcerated. The governor of Florida, in what I think is a stolen election to this day, just signed legislation passed by the Republican legislature
to make it much more difficult
to make it
for
difficult.
Them to do.
So for this ADOS foolishness to say we're comfortable withholding our votes, you're punching yourself in the face.
Let me go to the phone lines. Let me go to Maurice from Maryland. Maurice?
Yeah, I'm here.
Go ahead. What's on your mind?
How y'all two guys doing?
Fine. I'm doing fine.
Hey, look, check this out. I've listened to these candidates, the Democrats. I've listened to these debates. And the whole thing is this right here. I understand about referendum and restoration. I understand it's always been racism in America. I'm 60 years old. I understand all that. Okay. But this is the thing right here. These guys got together, and they decided that they wanted to run for president. Okay. They wanted to make a change in America, especially with black African-Americans, Hispanics, and you can go on and name races that they want to make
a change. So, Maurice, what's your point? Make your point. Go ahead, because I've got other calls. Go ahead.
The point is, they're so I think they're so concerned on this issue right here that they're forgetting about, hey, look, let's go with the main agenda. We're going to run for president. We need to get together. We need to win this election. Get this guy out of office. Because if we don't get this guy out of office, the subject that we're talking about right now, this guy's going to walk right back up in there for 4 years.
That's right.
Yeah. And Maurice, let me also say this, and I think that this is one of the things that is lost. We now have a divided Congress, okay? And so whatever your political persuasion happens to be, if something comes out of the House, it's not going to be passed in the Senate if it is even remotely partisan.
That's right.
Okay? And I think that, you know, for ADOS or anyone or any other organization that says it is concerned about black people, that then perhaps their work may need to be in areas that can flip the Senate and help keep the House. If you believe that the Democrats have black people's interest in the forefront. But this is not certainly, you know, for those who do not like President Trump, yeah, you know, vote him out. But whoever you put in there, you've got to put somebody, you've got to make sure that you are voting for your representative. But also let's be very, very clear, you know, particularly as it relates to the gerrymandering vote regarding last year, almost the majority of the state legislatures are Republican across this country. And see, people always want to come out and vote for president.
Mm-hmm.
And then, but as it trickles down, you don't know what your state delegate, you don't know who your representative is, you don't
come
know
on,
who
Harold.
Your state senator
Teach
is.
On it, brother.
And so you need to vote all the way down from president to your ANC person.
Yes.
That's what this racial issue is about. It's not just about, you know, Kamala Harris or Cory Booker. You know, because as they say, all of my skin folk ain't my kin folk.
Right.
So anyway.
No, I mean the point you raise in Pennsylvania, for example, the gerrymander case, where the Pennsylvania Supreme Court ruled against the Republicans in the state that it engaged in extreme gerrymandering because they said it violated the Pennsylvania state constitution. All the Supreme Court of the United States could do is say, we can't intervene in this because it's a state issue. What you said, everyone listening, please understand what Harold Fisher just said. Local elections are...
They matter.
Come on. If Brian Kemp hadn't stolen the state of Georgia, you wouldn't be facing this extreme abortion bill legislation because Stacey Abrams will be the governor of Georgia. These demographics are changing. The whole South could flip in the next 15, 20 years. But only if we are engaged in the political process. What you said is... You can't really overestimate the importance of what you said, brother.
Thank you so much, Maurice. Let's go to Lewis calling from Waldorf. What's on your mind?
Right. I just want to say I've been very vocal on Kamala Harris as a vote for Donald Trump. And let's be honest.
Why is that?
I say because if you look at her sister, she's never been identified as an American black. Any paperwork she filled out, I bet it was signed other when it came to African American. But now that it's convenient for her, she's going to push her blackness down our throats. When she comes from a caste system where so Indian and Jamaica, they always look down on American blacks. Always, no doubt about it. And look at her home. She's married to a white man. So all of a sudden, you're this black savior. As a people, we're so gullible because I'm born and raised in Washington. And we're always looking for a savior, always looking for God. And Kamala Harris is going to cause us 4 more years of Donald Trump. And it's the same thing with Cory Booker. I mean, we got Joy Reid on MSNBC praising Kamala Harris like she's the next best thing since white free. And then again, what has she done?
Can I ask you something, brother, very, very quickly? Do you intend on voting for a candidate in the primaries?
If I had to vote for Kamala Harris,
No. You don't have to vote for Kamala Harris at all. No, brother. Right. Nobody, I'm not telling you to vote for Kamala Harris at all. I'm asking if you're going to vote at all.
I tell you point blank, my vote is going to Joe Biden.
Okay. Well, no. Then you are going to vote. because you do understand the importance. I see.
The American white male. Because that's what it's going to take to win the election. Well, let's be honest with ourselves.
Well, because
no white man between 45 and 65 is going to vote for Kamala Harris.
Well, what you're articulating is a political calculation. And rather than debate whether or not Kamala Harris put down other when she came to Howard or pledged AKA or majored in political science and did all the things that she did here at Howard. I mean, rather than debate any of that, we realize now that we got a couple of dozen people running for president on the Democratic side alone. And so what you're articulating is, you know, ultimately, if the ultimate objective of people of African descent in this country is to somehow displace this racist who's in the White House, that we need to think strategically about who best can do that. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, sir. Because right now, we're too divided. And I think, just the mere fact, when you look at that debate, it was calculated what she did. And I think it hurt the Democrats more than it helped her.
But hold on, first of all, Lewis, I don't think that anything on that stage was not calculated there. So let us be clear. Those are politicians up there, number one. Number two, the point that you made about white men between the ages of 45 and 65 not voting for Kamala Harris, I would argue that in 2008, you could say the same thing about this light-skinned black guy who was born in Hawaii and cut his teeth in Chicago with a funny name.
With an African name.
Yeah, so, right. You know, and I would argue that you had black men, white men doing it twice. Mm-hmm. So I do believe in the political calculus, and we can do horse trading politics, but I would say you know, America is constantly surprising us,
isn't it?
Harold, look, Lewis,
that's the only way we've survived, brother. And a lot of surprises America has had as we sit here on the 55th anniversary of the voting of the Civil Rights Act of 1964. A lot of those surprises is because we have forced America's hand.
Yeah.
And it hasn't always been easy. So, but you're right. Anyone who can tell you who's going to win this election a year and a half out, don't listen to them. Yeah. We don't know what's going to happen.
We really don't. Lewis, thank you so much. How do you believe that Kamala Harris and other candidates, Cory Booker, for example, should deal with racist attacks? And if they are bombarded by racist attacks consistently, does that prevent them from getting their message out outside of the issue of race?
Harold, you began the show by pointing out something that we've seen play out over the arc of the minutes of the show, which is this internal debate in our community. I think that's much more of a threat to a Harris or a Booker than external critiques. I mean, what Donald Trump Jr. retweeted and then the responses to him from the entire field demonstrate, if nothing else, that the Democratic candidates are going to stand in lockstep to say racism must not be allowed to enter into the political discourse. I do think what you pointed out at the beginning is potentially a bigger threat. What happens if we have folks inside the black community say, well, she's married to a white man, or Cory Booker, he's not black enough? That becomes something very much more difficult for them to negotiate. And I think we may see it at the end of February 2020 in South Carolina. As they're campaigning in South Carolina, some of this has to do with socioeconomic class. But, brother, that one I don't have a clear answer for, if it's coming from us.
It's funny, after the debates, immediately after the debates, Kamala Harris's husband tweeted out a video of him talking about donating to her campaign. And, I remembered, because it's always been her. I said, oh, that's right, she's married to a white guy. And I was like, eh, okay. But and that was my thing. It was like, okay.
And Cory Booker is now dating Rosario Dawson, apparently.
Is he? So,
yeah. That's what they're saying.
That's what they say.
That's what they say.
That's what they say.
That's what they say.
But the thing, the comments in the Twitter thread about her husband was, well, he shouldn't have done that because it would
really?
Yeah, there were a lot of black folks that were saying that he should not have been the face of asking for money because, the black folks that started paying attention to her during that debate may have then been alienated by seeing her white husband. That, I mean, and this is a, and that is the kind of thing that we saw in that particular thread, and the kind of internal, intercultural debate that, that is now a part of this campaign.
Let me ask you something as a political journalist. I mean, you've seen a lot of these campaigns. And I was listening to some journalists talk about this the other day, black journalists. In your experience, what role have spouses of candidates played generally?
I would say it depends. And I would say not just black candidates, but candidates as a whole.
Absolutely.
I would say that for some candidates, even with, let's take Martin O'Malley and Katie O'Malley. Katie O'Malley was popular. She was popular. You had Michelle Obama, for example, which is such a prime example. You had a lot of black women say, well, yeah, they were going to support Barack Obama. But when they saw his wife.
Oh, brother, she was a difference maker.
Yeah. And you could even go all the way back to Jacqueline Kennedy.
No question.
She was young. She was vibrant. She was still traditional, but she marched to her own tune. So I would say that the candidates' wives, mm-hmm. and we are talking about wives and even more generally spouses now.
Sure.
Because the examples that I gave were wives.
And Buttigieg. I mean, his spouse was on the cover of Time.
Exactly. So I think that they do play a role.
Have you seen them uniformly play? Because everyone we've talked about so far is outliers.
Yeah, those are the outliers. Yeah.
So you say generally, though, they're anonymous, right?
Maybe not. I would not vote for any candidate based on who their spouse is, other than if they have a good spouse, I may say good for them.
Like Barack.
Yeah. You know.
But I mean, Betty Ford had her challenges. What's the brother's name that beat Jesse in the 88 primary? Dukakis.
Yes.
Remember his wife had some substance abuse challenges. But we're speaking about all these we talked about because they were outliers. They were, but I mean, if you ask me to name the spouse of the dozen candidates so far for the Democratic, it'd be hard pressed.
But you would be.
Yeah, but you're raising something important, man. A white man married. That's South Carolina's going to be interesting, brother.
Most certainly, and we still have a long row to hold. Dr. Carr, it is always good to see you.
I appreciate you, brother. Always,
absolutely, and to all of our listeners, we appreciate you chiming in, no matter what your opinion happens to be. That is the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141 for this Tuesday, July 2nd. I'm Harold Fisher. You can tweet us using the hashtag WHURFM. Now stay tuned for The Connection. Good night.